What's so great about? What's so great about?
Great questions and gets great answers. My name is Terry.
My name's Andy.
Andy, how the bloody heck are you?
Very, very well, Terry. And you?
I too am well.
Good to hear that.
We're back talking What's So Great About Wes Anderson. Just me and you this week.
I tell you, it's refreshing.
The gruesome twosome back at it, huh?
The dynamic duo. It's nice. It feels like
it feels like
loosey goosey. It's like, all right, here we are.
We're talking Grand Budapest, which we'll get into in a little while. But it's been a while since we recorded, Andy.
How the 2 weeks?
It's been a while. And everything I can't remember.
Good gig in
so
the
you
point.
Say.
Eh? Yeah. It was good.
Doubtful.
I kissed a girl at that gig. I can't be too loud. Didn't, and it was the, I tell you something else. It was the first time I'd ever kissed a girl when I hadn't even met her before the gig. In the space of half an hour, I've gone from meeting her to kissing her. I mean, meeting
Did
her
you get your fingers wet?
No, I didn't. Don't be so cruel, Terry. It was in the mosh pit, for God's sake.
And you kissed her in the mosh pit?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, I had game at one point.
Did you, though?
No, but it was a lucky night, all right?
Yeah. A broken clock is right once a day.
Exactly.
Twice a day. Whatever, yeah.
Listen, how the bloody hell are you, more importantly?
I'm good. I haven't really been up to that much. Hey, actually, about a week ago, maybe further, I went to the movies.
Oh, yeah.
I went to see The Northman.
Oh, yeah. That looks
Have you seen the ads?
I just seen one ad one time and I thought, this looks good.
It's fucking deadly.
5 hours long, I bet?
Just over two. It's like 2:10 or something. It's by the guy who did The Witch and The Lighthouse.
Oh, The Witch starring Finchie.
Yes, and Finchie is in this as well for a little minute.
Brilliant, how is it?
I loved it, I thought it was great. It's I didn't realise until the day I went to see it, it's based on the Norse mythology that Shakespeare adapted into Hamlet.
Right.
So, like, the main character is Amleth.
Okay.
And now Hamlet, obviously. But it, like, there's literally, you're like, oh, Ethan Hawke, oh, there's Mufasa, you know, or there's the evil uncle, there's Scar, you know, the Lion King is loosely.
Oh, is it? I didn't even know that.
No, well, there you go. You're learning that.
What a lesson. It's only 3 minutes in here.
Yeah. It's fucking, it looks like, I went to see it on the big screen. Yeah. I was just the right amount level of high.
Nice.
So it's like you're seeing all these, like, wow, look, they really shot it in on location and like doing all this.
They shot this in Atlanta.
yeah, it's not important. I did go see it with a friend of mine, and like that, I can imagine me being like saying that to him. Like, yeah. What? No, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. It's not important.
Very good. Yeah, I thought it was fucking good.
Deadly. Yeah, it has the, what would I call them? A slab of beef.
Who?
That is Alexander Skarsgård.
All right, let me have a look at this.
You know who Alexander Skarsgård is.
Alexander. I feel like I've searched for him specifically live on the pod several times.
Skellen Skarsgård's son. You've searched for Skellen Skarsgård, definitely. Are you okay?
Hello. I'll need a minute. Yep. I don't know why my voice is so high. Yeah, he's a slab, all right.
It's Jeez. And like the whole thing, you know, the uncle kills the dad who's the king and the prince runs away.
But you know what? Sorry to interrupt you. When I see someone with a bod like this, I just think he's probably in pain right now. You know what I mean? To look that shredded. Like, he's bound to be like, as soon as they yell cut, like, you know the way fighters on weigh-in day,
yeah.
like, they're like, get me something to eat. Get me a cheeseburger or something.
It's you know? Weird because I don't think I've ever seen him look this ripped. Like, he's normally quite, like, tall and angular and imposing.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it's like,
there's
not a pick on him. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
the abs are insane.
Frank. You would hang him from a hook and punch him to, like, train. Like, you know, it's like that fucking...
Yeah.
It's a slab of beef.
Yeah, he's a slab of beef. No denying it. I wish he had a beard, but that's fine.
He does have a beard now.
Oh, Grizzly Adams did have a beard. Yeah. The pictures I'm seeing, I'm not seeing any beards now. But anyway, that's not neither here nor
there. You know what's cool about it is it's really fucking weird. It's a weird movie and all this weird shit happens in it. But I was so mesmerized by how it looks and like everybody's doing their own version of a Norse accent and none of them match up. But I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, like Nicole Kidman is doing, hers seems kind of Swedish. Another person seems maybe like Finnish.
That actually doesn't bother me, especially when people do accents in things like, when there's like a French movie, but they're all speaking British, even though they're French, you know, like something like that. I'm like, I don't care. Like, that's fine, you know.
And there's a bit in it where, it's a literal, like, it's Vikings, you know. And they are like going to like attack a village. But the night before, this crew or whatever, you know, this horde, they do this like, ritual where they transform themselves figuratively into animals, into like beasts, like certain members of the tribe do it, and then they send them in. So they're doing this like weird dance, and then like when they're finished, they're all like, it's really like fucking visceral, and I'm like, wow, how did they give this guy $90 million to make this movie? And can he do it? Can they give him more money, please? Because I will go watch
them. I'll go again. Well, but then what would you give it out of 10, then?
I think I give it 4.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
That's a 9.
So that's a 9. 8 or 9, like, you know, it's. I was very glad. It stuck with me. You know, I was thinking about it, and I would recommend that, like, it's really violent as well. Lots of good action in it. I wouldn't say it's, like, you could probably lose by 20 minutes, but also it's the kind of film that, like, I didn't mind sitting with it. I didn't
mind 40 minutes for the rest of us.
An hour and a half. You need a bit longer than an hour and a half.
Yeah, I suppose.
Like, yeah. But, like, I didn't mind that. Like, I was never bored. Like, if it's kind of slows down a little bit, you're looking at, like, wow, this is really striking, or this is really weird, as opposed to sitting there.
That's one that I would be interested in. It's interesting now to see how these movies are just available out, like, you know, as soon as they're gone from the cinema. Do you remember you used to have to wait a year, and then you might see it on Sky Premier in like a year's time or something like that, whereas now it's all
I'm seeing ads for the Batman. I'm seeing ads for the Batman, and I think
I'm pretty sure I've seen it in the shop.
Yeah, probably already. Like, I
how
think
mental is that?
Well, it's because of Warner Brothers, where especially because remember last year I was saying they did that like day and date release. So all the releases they had planned to go to the cinema, they simultaneously released them on HBO Max the same day, which is their streaming service. So like the new Matrix made fuck all money because at Christmas everybody just stayed at home and watched it.
Right.
And what they've said now is like that the CEO who has done that is gone, and now they use the 45-day window. So after it leaves, after it debuts in the cinema, 45 days later, you'll be able to get it on VOD or whatever, maybe Blu-ray. But I think the Blu-rays normally take a little bit longer.
It's mad to see how they've changed. Like, I was only looking at...
Like, COVID decimated the film industry. Like, you know, they said this weekend was the first time since before the pandemic that four movies opened to over 10 million. Wow. Like four different movies opened at over 10 million. Whereas what was happening was you'd have one big release that's like 100 million.
Yeah.
The rest of them are all gross. Nothing. 5 million. Because nobody would go see them. Now people are starting to go back and they're like...
Multiple. I like this movie. People who just love the theatre. Who just love a good motion picture, as you guys would call it.
What a picture.
It's mad though, the difference. I was only looking at that Netflix thing. I was trying to bone up on what's the deal with Netflix. So they lost 200,000 subscribers this year when they were expecting to gain 2.5 million. They've jacked up the price. And now they've got... They're toying with some idea of a reduced rate, but with ads.
Yeah.
Which, got some nerve.
But,
and it's shy as well. Come on. 15 quid? For 15 quid is shy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. Like, I can see myself cutting ties with if it goes any higher, which it probably will.
If it goes higher, I will definitely cancel. Yeah. And they're trying to crack down on that sharing.
They won't be able to do it. Like, because on our one, we have three accounts. Like, yeah. I have an account, Faye has an account, and we have an account for Bonnie.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way they can say, well, you are all three different, we're all in the same household. There's no way of knowing. I guess maybe the IP address, I don't know, something like that. But like,
maybe there'd be a way that if, say, technically you were sharing, let's say your Amazon Prime membership with me. Right.
Okay.
And they see, just theoretically, right, hypothetically, and then they see, oh, how is this being viewed in Arklow and in Dublin at the same time? That's the only way they could maybe do it. But like,
yeah,
even then it'd be tricky, you know.
Yeah, you know, like we could just put it down the bots of some kind. Hey, yeah, but hey, their share price dropped. Did you see how much? How much?
No, I didn't see how much.
54 billion. With a B.
I believe we call that in the biz tanking.
Wall Street is a notoriously chill place. Like, considering they have over 200 million subscribers.
Yeah.
So to lose 200,000, okay.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. But then it's like Wall Street's like, ring the bell.
You might
like,
say Wall Street's got Netflix and no chill. Am I right?
easy now.
Hey, I've been watching something, if I can just jump in on that.
Yeah, sure.
I'm watching an actual scripted thing. I thought, I figured you'd be loving this.
White smoke.
It's a...
ring the bells.
I was watching a television program, a new one called Chivalry, starring Steve Coogan and Sarah Soleimani. Is that her name?
I've not heard of this show or that person.
Oh, Steve Coogan is actually Alan.
No,
Partridge.
I know who Steve Coogan is. Yeah, thank you very much.
Great, Sarah. I think I might be pronouncing it wrong. Soleimani. She was in that show that I loved. Him and Her. Was that what it was called?
Oh yeah.
She was Becky. but she's like, it's fun. It's a funny concept because like Steve Coogan is like, he's like an aging like Hollywood producer who like really has to like toe the line with you know the Me Too movement and all this, and he can just see he's really like struggling with it. But like John C. Reilly was in the last episode, Paul Rudd was in the first episode, like only literally like 30 seconds, but like it's funny. Like I'm only about two episodes in. I think it was on Channel 4 or something like that. But
you get on the player, you get on the All 4,
just on my Virgin Media TV. Ooh. Of course. Which I haven't looked back on, to be honest.
You're happy? Happy?
Very, very happy. The fact, I tell you, if nothing else alone, the fact that I can just stick on, like, say, for example, Liverpool Man City a few weeks ago. It's just there on the big TV. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to find something. It's on at 4. I'm pressing the button.
I understand, you know, completely.
It's like, kind of worth it for
it
that.
It certainly helps that I have a friend's Sky Go.
Oh, yes.
Yes, account. Like, if I wanted to right now, I could. Let me just press a button here. Oh, Man United, Chelsea are on right now.
Oh, no. Okay. I shouldn't have told them about football. Oh. Your eyes will be diverted.
It's a goal for Chelsea. Okay. What? It's a goal for Chelsea. Literally.
As you turned up.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, that's that is unfortunate.
Well, anyway, I'm going to X out of that now. hey, speaking of John C. Reilly.
Yes.
I have been watching a show with him in it.
Hey, look at this.
Have you heard of this show called Winning Time?
I have not. Of course I haven't.
It should be all over your Sky account. It's about the LA Lakers.
Winning Time.
The rise of the...
Do you know what? I've actually have seen this, and I've said specifically that's something I would like to watch.
It's really good. I'm all in on it now. I was kind of a bit like iffy at the start, but I'm 8 episodes in, and I am enjoying it very, very much.
Nice.
I have to say,
I would love that. Yeah, that's right up my street now. Okay, I see the ad here. Okay, very good.
Yeah, because it's all about, like, you know, Magic Johnson and the end of, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's career and stuff.
Yeah.
And how, you know, he transformed your man, Jerry Buss, who John C. Reilly plays. He kind of... The Lakers were kind of shit. Well, they weren't shit, but, like, they were kind of in a funk. And the league itself was in a funk.
Yeah.
And, like, he brought in, like, the whole concept of Laker girls and all that stuff. Like, it's very... I'm enjoying it quite a bit. Jason Segel is in it, playing a kind of straight role.
Okay.
Our boy Adrian Brody is in it,
playing
Pat Riley. I don't remember.
How is he in it?
He's good in this. Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about Adrian Brody, to
be honest. We'll get into it later.
We'll get into it specifically the Grand Budapest.
But in general,
no, even before that, like I don't know how I feel about him. I don't know if I love him or if I don't like him at all. You know?
He's a funny one.
I keep thinking, like, that he's wrong for everything he's in, but yet he's also brilliant in most of it.
In a lot of it, like.
How does that work, huh? You tell me.
I don't know.
You tell me. How does that work?
John C. Reilly.
Go on.
John C. Reilly, I don't know if you heard the interview where it was like, because Adam McKay has produced this thing.
Yeah.
I think he was the driving force behind it. And like him and Will Ferrell had a big falling out over it.
Oh, yeah?
But John C. Reilly was saying like it was supposed to be...
Adam McKay had a falling out or John C. Reilly
with Will Ferrell. Adam McKay had a falling out with Will Ferrell.
Over this thing?
Yeah, and they kind of dissolved their production company and all. I think they dissolved their production company beforehand. And then like Michael Shannon, I don't know who... Did you ever see... Michael Shannon's great, but did you ever see Boardwalk Empire? Or
I saw episode one.
So you know the guy who was... Look up Michael Shannon. He has a distinctive face.
Oh, very distinctive.
He's fucking class, man. He's brilliant.
Hmm.
He's supposed to play Jerry Buss. But there's a lot of like breaking the fourth wall and talking to the camera.
Yeah.
In it. Kind of that Adam McKay style and... Like his serious style. And he was like, I don't really like this. I can't wrap my head around it. So he kind of...
Was he involved?
Michael Shannon?
Oh, Michael Shannon said he can't wrap his head around. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he dropped out and Adam McKay called John C. Reilly and asked him, did he want to do it?
Mm.
And John C. Reilly said, he was like, I'm sitting at home. He's like, I thought my career was over because he hadn't got any work.
Wow, I never really thought of that.
I couldn't wrap my head around. He's like, you know, he's like, 40 something movies under my belt, and this is how my career ends. And I was like, how is this possible that nobody wants John C. Reilly to be in any project? But he was saying,
it's interesting. I never even
Adam McKay called him up, and he was like, yeah, definitely. He was really excited. And then he rang Will Ferrell and told Will Ferrell about it. And Will Ferrell got really mad because he's like a huge Lakers fan and he thought he could play Jerry Buss and they had a big there was a big thing with Adam McKay and Will Ferrell and he was like basically he was annoyed that Adam McKay didn't tell him that he had to hear it from John C. Reilly
that John C. Reilly was playing this role.
Yeah,
but like Michael Shannon was going to be playing that role anyway.
Yeah, I know, but I think it was that
if he couldn't do it he wanted to be the one to do it.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
drama. But I was, yeah. I was thinking about the whole John C. Reilly thing, and like, I've watched a few shows. Like, when I was sick there a few weeks ago, I was watching a lot of weird shows that, like, mm-hmm. I'd heard about, and I was like, well, I'd never had the time to watch them, but I'm lying in bed for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a show called Ultra City Smits. And it's a show, it's like...
Unbelievable.
AMC Plus, right? Here's the pitch. No, it's like a kind of gritty conspiracy drama comedy, but all the characters in it are dolls.
Okay.
So it's like they're animated, so it's, but it's like a, you know...
Yeah.
A doll, but they animate it to walk and talk and stuff. But the cast has all these, like, Kurtwood Smith is one of the characters.
Hey, my man.
He's...
Big Red.
He's credited in the thing. I don't think he says a word in it. He's credited in every episode. The character quite looks like him, but I don't think he says a word in the show.
Brilliant.
But John C. Reilly was in it, and I was like, what's John C. Reilly doing in this show? You know what I mean?
Like, maybe he felt like he had to.
Maybe that's the thing, though. Like that, I was thinking about it afterwards. Like, I was like, maybe he felt assumed. Like, oh, I'll just take this. You know, yeah, like it's being offered to me. But, and it's not like he's the main role. He has like one episode where he's kind of the main character, but not really. He's still really good in it. Like he's
I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him in much. He seems like he's very associated with like a certain era of like comedy, I guess. And like, I'm sure he can do serious. I'm sure we've seen him in serious stuff, and like he's been good. But like, I mean, or have we? I don't know. You probably.
I have. Like if you if, like the '90s. Like if you look at his '90s, it's like
Like so, you know, he can act. Like so,
that's
but I always just assume, like, oh yeah, he's living life. I mean, I'm sure he is still living life. I'm sure he's still rich, but like, I assume he's in things all the time. I just don't see them. You know,
like if you look at it here, his say from '97. His '97 is Boogie Nights, '98 Thin Red Line, '99 Never Been Kissed, '99 Magnolia, 2000 Perfect Storm.
Yeah, so he was really in demand.
Gangs of New York, 2002, like Chicago, 2002, The Hours,
like same year.
Yeah, Aviator, 2004. Like you know, there's
and then, that's before he even kind of hit his peak.
Then 2006 is when you're talking, you know, Ricky Bobby.
Yeah,
he's in Tenacious D movie. He's in Walk Hard, 2007. Step Brothers, 2008. Like you know.
Yeah, like and then, 2008 is when he kind of peaked in my mind, or when he came to the fore, I guess.
It's like it's almost like it was for a new generation.
What?
Like he put himself out there, a new audience that were like, oh, this guy's really funny.
Yeah, and now it seems like it's come back around again, and it's like, I can't see, the way they make movies now, I can't see how John C. Reilly actually fits into that.
Like, the last thing, I mean... He was in that Kong. I saw him in that Kong Skull Island. He was pretty good. He's in Sing. He does a lot of voice work, actually, in Sing.
And Sing actually, is a weird one, isn't it?
We talked about that before. Like
it's a weird one. Who's it for?
I know. Like we tried to get Bonnie to watch it, and like she does, she likes the song part.
Yeah, same. Put them same on. With Joni when she was younger. Like,
there's an error in this movie that's just the drama of this koala's failing business, and you know.
I don't understand.
But like then again, every now and again, Bonnie would just be like, "Mr. Moon." I'm like, "Who?" And then like I kind of put it together. I was like, "Do you mean the koala?" And she's like, "Yes." And like that fucking koala from Sing.
That
like,
guy.
How does that name stick?
Oh, very good. Well, look, have you been watching anything else, or can we kick into this?
I got a couple of things more.
Give me one.
No, I'm going to give you two rapid fire, right? Okay. Because we're back. I was talking about Winning Time, good TV. April, it's all the good shows are coming back. Barry season 3.
Yeah, I hear
first episode, jizzed my pants.
Okay,
it was brilliant.
Well. Okay, well.
And that's... 3 episodes in to Better Call Saul season 6. Whoo!
Good,
man,
is it?
For you know what? It's fucking deadly. But for somebody who likes to watch, say, process stuff, you know what I mean? You like to watch somebody out walking around or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's like chunks of pretty much every episode of Better Call Saul, or maybe from like season 2. Whenever Mike is in an episode, which is every episode, he is like putting together something, or he is like
he's doing something.
It's like literally like there'll be like 10-15 minutes of no dialogue and him like figuring out how to put something together, or like like there's literally one episode where I was like what the fuck, it spent 20 minutes, I was like, what the fuck are we doing here? And by the end of the episode, it all made sense. It all came together. I'm like, he's shooting at a pair of shoes that are like hanging off a fucking telephone wire in the desert. But like, it's like you see him trying to get the shot right, lining everything up. And I'm like, what is going on here? And then by the end, but it's also very oddly relaxing.
See, you know? But that sort of stuff, like, if it was all process, if I knew it was all going to be process, then I'd get into it. Now, let me just, as a side note, Terry, forget Japan. Japan's out. It's all about Seoul, Korea. That's the towns that I've been walking through
days. I'm a Korea's man.
Yeah.
They make the best movies, Andy.
And I tell you what, they make the best walking through towns, because...
Is that
they
a
give
thing?
Me, they yep. They give me everything I want. They give me rain. They give me neon. They give me reflecting neon in the rain.
Ooh.
They give me, and you know what?
Like, those two are the same things, though.
What?
Neon rain and then neon in the rain.
Oh. Like. You poor naive fool, Terry. No, it's not the same. They're all different things, and then you put them together. The rain is great. The neon is great on the building, but then you see the neon on the ground in the rain reflecting.
How high are you when you're watching these things?
Well, interesting question, Terry. Not very, as it turns out, because I'm off the clock for the minute. And I'm still enjoying.
Yeah, you got to be off the clock though. It's coming up to D-Day, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm off the clock anyway. But I'm still enjoying it. I didn't think I would, but I'm still bloody loving it. But when I was, yes, sure, that was also excellent. That's probably why I started. But I'm in it now. And I tell you the difference. This is what's mad about different cultures. They're all walking around. I have to be careful. They're all walking around.
Those people.
With umbrellas. Like, it's like a typhoon or something, a mental rain. And they're all, like, in t-shirts and, like, skirts.
You've no idea how hot it is.
That's what I was going to say. It must still be just really hot, like, the whole time. Like, but they're all, everyone's just in their indoor.
Remember Thailand, the rain, it was never cold.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Right. I was only saying to Kerry, I was like, I bet you that rain's not cold. That's why they're all like, if that was Dublin or if that was Ireland, they'd be like, get out of the rain. Like, they're just going about their business, like buying things, waiting to cross the street, like chatting. It's like, get inside.
I remember when I was in Thailand, maybe it was Laos. I think it ended up in Laos, and it was like the first night. It was like, oh, we're going to watch Man United play. Man City, back when Sven was managing Man City.
Ooh, back when United was like top.
Yeah, and they had a bar right next to us, and my friend of the podcast, Brian Arnold, who I was travelling with, he went to get a seat, and I was like, I'll follow you down. So he'd gone down about half an hour earlier than me, with some of the people we had met, and he was like, we're going to have dinner, have a beer, watch that on the big screen. And when I left, I was like, what's that sound? It's raining? Like, this can't be rain. It's like fucking gunfire or something. it was rainy season when we were there, but it was absolute monsoon. And I remember, like, literally, it would take you 10 seconds to cross the road. Like, I'm under a hoarding.
Yeah.
I get across the road, I'll be under another hoarding. And I was like, and I was roasting as well. I was like, Jesus, so hot. But stepping out into the rain, head to toe, I don't think I've ever been more wet from rain. And again, I was like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But then again, you're just like sitting in the bar, then like kind of.
Like, you're fine.
I wasn't fine. I was still wet, but I was like, I wasn't like, you know, I need to keep drinking to keep myself warm. Just like kind of like I'm slightly uncomfortable wet here. Like,
what is a typhoon, Terry?
Isn't it like a hurricane on the water?
I was going to say, I knew it was something to do with water.
Hey, that's a pretty good name for an album, isn't it? Hurricane on the water.
Yes. I feel like that's
out there steal that.
If this is anyone but Bob Dylan, you're stealing our bit.
When I release my spoken word album, Terry Toner, Hurricane on the Water.
It received largely negative reviews from critics. Who is this guy, they said?
Alec Baldwin.
There you go. Well,
largely
look,
negative reviews from critics. He never released another album.
Terry, talk to me about Budapest. I'm dying to get into it.
Okay, well, yeah, let's get into our review.
Oh, sorry, this is your
Grand
okay.
Budapest Hotel.
Why do you want to be a lobby boy?
Who wouldn't? At the Grand Budapest, sir.
And so my life began. Junior lobby boy in training under the strict command of Monsieur Gustav H. Many of the hotel's most valued and distinguished guests came for him.
I love you.
I love you. She was dynamite in the sack, by the way.
She was 84.
I've had older.
This was also when I met Agatha.
She's charming. She's so charming.
Is he flirting with you?
Yes.
I approve of this union.
I became his pupil, and he was to be my counselor and guardian.
The police are here.
Tell them I'll be right down. She's been murdered, and you think I did it.
Hey! Stop!
You're looking so well, darling. You really are. I don't know what sort of cream they've put on you down at the morgue, but I want some.
This is Madame D's last will and testament. To Monsieur Gustav H., I bequeath a painting known as Boy with Apple.
Wow. What?
Who's Gustav H.?
I'm afraid that's me, darling.
If I learn you ever once laid a finger on my mother's body, living or dead...
I go to bed with all my friends.
We need to make a plan for your survival. Hide this. It's in code, and you might need a magnifying glass to read it, but it tells you exactly where and how to find Boy with Apple.
I'm a baker. I'm not a fence, if that's the term.
I want roadblocks at every junction for 50 kilometers. I want rail blocks at every train station for 100 kilometers.
Get in!
I want 50 men and 10 bloodhounds ready in 5 minutes.
Can't arrest him simply because he's a bloody immigrant.
Take your hands off my lobby boy!
Have you ever been questioned by the authorities?
Yes, on one occasion.
What?
I was arrested and tortured by the rebel militia after the desert uprising.
Right. Well, you know the drill then. Zip it.
That was, of course, the trailer for the 8th film by Wes Anderson, The Grand Budapest Hotel. Now, Andy.
Yes?
Care for a beer buff?
Please. Is this from your expansion pack?
This is from the expansion pack, and I tell you what.
Good, is it?
It's... You know, my other book had an essay and an interview with Wes Anderson.
Yes.
This book has an interview with Wes Anderson, an interview with Ralph Fiennes, an interview with the composer, an interview with the production designer. It has bloody, yeah, and so many good
too
pictures.
Too much, if anything.
Yeah, maybe, but, you know. Let's just say I won't be buying the French Dispatch book.
It seems like a good toilet book.
Yeah, it would be.
Is it too big?
It's not too big.
For a toilet, I mean, to read on the toilet.
No, it's perfect. The other one would be too big. The other one is like a coffee table book.
Yeah, okay.
This one is a smaller version.
It's been in the bathroom.
It's been flagged. The soothing pastels really help.
Okay, well, from this expansion pack book, Terry, what have you got for me?
Well, why don't you pump the brakes there a second there? Why don't you take a guess at the budget, Andy?
The budget. This was a doozy, and the last few were hits. I am going to say the budget was $70 million.
I was thrown by how much this movie cost. $25
million. What?
Talk about
efficiency.
Well, if you think about it, there's so much of the external stuff is like stop motion.
Yeah.
You know, when they're taking the lift up to the hotel and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's...
And is it an actual, like, dioramas at some
point? That part. Or, like, when they're skiing and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's not...
Yeah, I suppose. Okay. Well,
Now, this was another one, and this film ran from March to February. Right. So, 11 long months. Time.
I do remember seeing... It seemed like every couple of years there was a movie about a hotel.
You're thinking Isn't of the other few... exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yeah.
The best exotic Marigold... Sorry, the best exotic Marigold Hotel.
What and year was that?
The sequel was the second best exotic Marigold Hotel.
And then there was the Grand Budapest Hotel. I was like, what is this? What are they all doing?
It's a new genre of movie.
Yeah, hotel movies.
Yeah.
Okay, so the opening weekend, Terry.
Opening. So, I'm going to give you... There's no wide opening that you can judge against. So, the opening weekend in four theatres. Only opened in four theatres.
$8,000.
Try multiplying it by 100,000.
100,000?
By eight.
$8,000 by 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Eight.
$811,166.
Wow.
So in four, that's
I don't think that math works out. I'm just gonna try that out there.
It's an exceptional opening per screen average.
Very good.
It's crazy how well that did.
Okay, excellent.
And they rolled it out, like you say, over the course of a year. Care to take a stab at the domestic total?
$45 million.
Okay, you're not super far away. $59 million.
Okay. I feel like we would be I feel like me and you are amongst the two best people in the country at predicting. I mean, we don't get it right ever, but I feel like if you asked, compared us to 1,000 people on the street, you just said, what was the opening weekend for this? I'd say we would be within the top 2% all the time. Yeah. So, I'm gonna stick that feather in my cap.
Okay. Interesting.
Go on anyway, sorry.
Worldwide?
Worldwide. Mr. Worldwide himself.
I don't think you're going to get this. I'm going to say this right now. I don't think you're going to get it.
Okay. I will say it got 67 worldwide.
Go on then.
I only said 67 because you said I don't think you're going to get it. I was like, I'll lowball him then. Should have highballed.
172 million.
No. Well, if I just okay, it's not within 5.
172 million. Wow. A fucking smash.
Wow. And how come? And I don't mean that, like, but like, how is it just because it got like rave reviews and all that? Like, I suppose Anderson movies have always been.
It's European, and for lack of a better term, you know what I mean? Like, it had that appeal. Because a lot of his movies are very American. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is set around World War II, maybe. You know, they just say the big war. I mean, it's set in
1930s,
like, so.
Yeah, I think it's like, 32 or something.
Yeah, so, but...
Right.
I think that might... And look, I mean, we'll get into it, but like, it's, you know... Yeah. It was a huge hit. Like, it was one of the biggest ones of the year, I think, like, in terms of... I just remember in 2014, I think, was when it came out. And when the Oscars... Because it came out in March, like, for next March or next February...
Yeah.
Like, it was nominated for... I'll skip ahead to this one for our first piece of fun fact. Nominated for 9 Oscars. It was actually the most nominated movie that year. The 2015 Oscars.
How many did it win, out of interest?
1-4. I'm going to list off all the Oscars and you can guess which ones it won, all right?
Okay.
It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Cinematography, Best Editing, Best Original Screenplay, Best Costume Design, Best Makeup and Hair, Best Original Score, and Best Production Design.
Cinematography, Screenplay, Score, and Production.
Too right, too wrong. The other two it won was Costume Design and Hair and Makeup.
And what were the two that I got right?
Production and Score.
Wow, it didn't even win for Cinematography. What do they want?
I know, right?
Jesus. This is like the, this is like Oscar fodder as well, this sort of movie. Like,
I mean,
they'd love this.
As shown at the start of the film, Wes Anderson said this was heavily inspired by the works of Stefan Ziegler.
Mm-hmm.
Zweig, sorry, excuse me. Zweig has described things as a person, or his works as a person coming to him and telling him their story. Whereas Anderson says, in this case, it wasn't so much that somebody came to them with a story, but him and his friend Hugo Guinness, who he co-wrote the screenplay with, they happened to have a friend in common that they found very fascinating and decided this guy could be a main character of a story that we wanted to write about.
Mm.
And the rest kind of was
the
more...
rest is history.
It was more that it was like then... the style of this, like the story, the whole nesting box or whatever like that, like the Russian doll-esqueness of it, was more Zweig stuff.
Okay.
The part of Zero,
yeah,
played by Tony Revolori, you might know him as Flash Thompson from the Spider-Man movies.
I did not recognize him, but
did you not?
No.
He's in those Tom Holland. He's like Tom Holland's nemesis. He's this kind of bully. Remember, he's like, I hate Peter Parker, but he loves Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
In those movies.
Very different.
This is his first film. And the search to find Zero was narrowed down to two people. Tony and his older brother, Mario.
Right.
So literally like one of two of the Revolori brothers was going to end up playing the role.
Right.
I notice, sorry to interrupt, and again
I feel like I have to be careful here, but Wes Anderson always likes to have, like, for want of a better word, I seen on the Honest trailers, like, that he always has like a little brown fella, and I know that's not PC, but like, for want of a better word, like, there's always a character matching that description.
He said now for this one in particular, just for the character's backstory, he was looking for somebody who, for lack of a better term, was Arab.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Just for the way it went.
Yeah.
And he kind of they said they'd done like a world search. You know, they went to Europe.
I don't believe it. I don't believe that. I believe he had the skin color in mind. No, you know what? I'm going to take it back. I'm dancing
Andy,
with fire.
Please.
Here. But you know what I mean? It's just I just pointed it out. Just pointed it out. Anyway,
his
please,
character
proceed.
Of Zero was named after Zero Mostel. You might
of course.
You don't know who Zero Mostel is?
No.
He played the original Max Bialystock in Mel Brooks' Producers movie. You know, Larry David famously portrayed him in season 4 of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Brilliant.
Although Gustav H. is based on a real person, who, even in the book, the name is redacted. It's like asterisked out. Anderson had thought of Ralph Fiennes as the actor to play the role. He said, Ralph Fiennes, Anderson says that he was the type of method actor that he always wanted to work with somebody who would become the person in the role.
Yeah.
He wanted to be Gustav H. He also said that he kind of found him similar to Harvey Keitel, in that Keitel does this method as well. And so much so that Keitel and his fellow inmates in the movie lived in the prison where they filmed for 2 days prior to shooting. So they could come up with backstories and, you know, find themselves comfortable. Which I kind of find that's pretty funny.
That's funny, I'd say that was fun.
Yeah. again, he's only in the movie for like, what, five minutes?
Like, a few minutes, like,
Last thing I was going to say, the cast all stayed in the same hotel while filming. Hotel Boss in Görlitz, Germany. All the makeup and costume happening in the lobby to speed up filming. The owner of the hotel appeared as an extra working the desk in the Grand Budapest Hotel, and by day's end, when the cast had wrapped for the day, they would go back to their hotel and find the owner back behind the front desk.
Hey.
Doing double duty, huh?
Nice. Yeah. Not forgetting his roots.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a big shot. I'm in a Hollywood movie.
So long, suckers. Interesting. There's some fun facts, yeah, Terry.
I try to make them as fun as possible.
Okay, well, I appreciate the research. I was interested to see a bit about this one.
There's loads more of other
I'd love bits. To know. I tell you what I'd love to know about. I'd love to know about the making of it. Like the actual, but I think I'd be more like to see something, you know, like see a behind the scenes, because it's only as I've been looking back over, like, you know, the previous movies, and you see the little, like, things I would have just taken for granted, like him going room to room to room, like on a track or whatever, mm-hmm. and like the way, like the, oh, you're frozen on me there.
No, I'm here.
Oh dear.
Now you're frozen.
Oh dear. Well, folks.
You're the one who is frozen, Andy.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, back.
I was still talking that whole time. You were the one who was frozen.
I, too, was frozen. Oh, no, I was saying my internet connection is unstable.
Yes!
What's going on?
I have a wire in mine.
God damn it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, the way he goes from, like, room to room to room when he's filming, like, on a track, you know, and, like, the main subject is always set in the center all the time, like that must take some rehearsing and all this. So like, and then the diorama stuff and, you know, all that sort of, so like all that I find quite interesting. It's like a whole,
like,
you know,
there's loads that has been going around just because the French Dispatch is his latest one. Like I tagged you in one of them there where it's literally like, you know, he's moving from room to room and you see everything moving. I think he's a master craftsman, I'm gonna say it. I'm going to ask you, what did you think of this one?
I'll tell you one thing. I'll say this to start, right? I can't believe that Ralph... Is it Ralph or Rafe? I heard someone say Rafe before.
I like Ralph.
Okay, I'll say Ralph. I can't believe... Actually, I can believe, but he should have been nominated for Best Actor.
I have them here. Hold on.
But the Oscars, the Academy don't do comedies. But this is one of the best acting performances that I've seen in a good while.
So here are the people that were nominated, right? Bradley Cooper for American Sniper, right? There is another egregious one that wasn't nominated was Jake Gyllenhaal this year. Fucking Bradley Cooper, American Sniper, Eddie Redmayne in Theory of Everything, Michael Keaton in Birdman, who's pretty fucking good, Benedict Cumberbatch, Imitation Game, and Steve Carell in Foxcatcher.
And I think, like, he could have beat, and he won.
Redmayne for Stephen Hawking, like...
Of course. They're so stupid, the Academy, aren't they?
Like, how is this so one not worthy stupid. Of a nomination? Like,
not even a nomination. Yeah. Like, this, for me, like, this movie I thought was good. I liked it. I wouldn't say I was blown away, but I was blown away by Ralph Fiennes. Like he made the movie for me. If he wasn't in it or as good, I don't know if it would have caught with me. Like, and but like I enjoyed
everybody's it. Great in it though. I think everybody's fucking great in this
they
movie.
They are, but I don't know if I would have cared enough being me. You know what I mean? To like, he just, like, the first 10 minutes of this movie, I was like, I'm not enjoying this. I was like, I don't know about this. I was like, it's too robotic. It's too fast talking.
What are you talking about?
Yes, let's go over here.
What are you talking about?
The first 10 minutes.
Fast talking?
Yeah, the first 10 minutes in particular, it seemed like it was very just, like, very fake. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it sounded fake to me. It sounded like I was, like...
You're reading a book?
No. It was too Wes Anderson-y at the start for me. It was too...
That means nothing to me, to be honest.
That's fine. Come on. That's fine. But to me, that's...
But too Wes Anderson-y means nothing. That statement.
Oh, it does. This movie, what does it mean? This movie, it's too... Mean? It's all his idiosyncrasies dialed up to... Dialed up to 11.
But as a critique, you saying to Wes Anderson-y, like, I need to know what that means.
I thought it was going to be too much style over substance.
Okay, That's, you know, better. What I mean? That's okay. Better.
Okay.
Because, like, that, my big problem with Darjeeling Limited is that's what I think it completely is. It's,
yeah,
looks great, but it has nothing. It's, yeah, hollow. You're hollow.
And I thought that this was going to follow. Now, it didn't in the end, and I did enjoy it. And I know it sounds like I didn't enjoy it, but, like, in as much as I can like a movie like this, I did like it.
Do you have a stress ball in your hand?
It's Buddy's ball. I've just found it.
It looks like nice. You're squeezing it.
I am
squeezing
it as well.
I will say I love the first few minutes of this movie because...
I knew you would. No offense, but I knew you would.
It's like... this movie's very funny. It's a caper. But there's also, like, something, like, really sad about it. Like, everybody's really kind of lonely in this movie.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that he is willing to touch on that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see F. Murray Abraham for the first time, when we meet Jude Law, the younger version of the author, like, they're both very lonely people. Yeah. Even
seems like
Ralph
everyone
Fiennes,
in this is very,
like,
lonely. Yeah.
Is lonely in it. Like, the scene when in the car and it's like, oh, I never knew where he came from.
See,
in the train car, sorry. And he's like, I never knew where he came from. And he's lying there and there's, like, this melancholy there, you know, underneath all this whimsy that is happening.
Yeah.
You know, I really appreciated that. And I thought it was very, like, it got to me.
Yeah.
If you will.
He gave it the substance for me. I don't know if I would have been as on board with the rest of it if he wasn't holding my hand.
It's hard, you know, to know, though. Like, he's giving you
it
something.
It is hard.
He's giving you something brilliant. And then somebody else could come in and equally give you a different version and it's still good. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't equate to, like, if Ralph Fiennes isn't in it, it's terrible. I don't think.
Yeah. And I do think someone else could have done it and would have done it well. But I just think there was something... I just love the way he...
That first scene when you're introduced to him and it's like following him in the bedroom and he's like, it's a lovely tracking shot, but he's like, do this, do that, come on, this way or whatever. And you're like, wow. You know, like, not breaking stride. It's just so perfect. Like,
that's the thing. Like, it never looked bad ever. Like, it never didn't look great.
No, but the performance, the performance of him, like, he's moving at a clip the whole time.
Yeah,
like, and the movie moves at a fucking clip. I was like, oh,
it
we're 40 minutes into the movie and we're in prison already. I was like, I remember them being in prison, but I was like, oh, that's probably like an hour 10 into the movie. I'm like, no, you're going, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And there were so many things, little things in this movie I forgot. Like, when the author is, like, recording his message and then, like, that little kid comes in with the gun and he's like, don't do it.
Yeah,
don't.
Yeah.
And then, like, he shoots him anyway. He's like, ah! I was like, as a parent, you know, that's a very relatable thing where you're telling a child not to do something and they look, they look at you and they're like testing it and then they're like, yeah, just do it anyway.
And run.
Yeah, and then leg it off. And then when he comes back in, he's like, I'm sorry. He's like, it's okay.
Yeah, I was just, I don't know. I felt like, and I was only, like, I was watching it with Kerry, and like, she enjoyed it too. But afterwards, we were chatting about it, and I said I was worried that the first 10 minutes I wasn't going to like it. And she was like, I actually really didn't like the first 10 minutes either. But then once he sort of got into it more, I liked it more. So I thought that was interesting. Obviously, obviously we're quite similar in our tastes and stuff, but I thought it was interesting. I was like, okay, well, that part wasn't just me. There was obviously something.
You didn't like Jude Law at all, and F. Murray Abraham there, framing the vice of it. Like,
it wasn't that I didn't dislike them; it just didn't do anything for me yet. I was still warming up to it. Mm. It was still heating up.
Like, did you find when it was cutting back to them in between the story that, like, you're like, oh, I want to go back to Ralph Fiennes, or
no? I was fine once, like, after about maybe 25-30 minutes, maybe 20-25 minutes. I was. Then I was just kind of in, and I wanted to know what happened. You know, once he got to the house, And they're all sitting there and they're going over the deed and or the documents and all that. Around that point, or well, basically from the train onwards, I was kind of like, yes, okay, now I'm for whatever reason, now I'm in. There's stuff happening. It was just a little bit too, you know what I mean? Not to even dwell on it for too long, because it was only a small point, and otherwise, you know,
it gets. I guess the plot really kicks off.
Yeah,
you know, like,
and I thought it was going to be more of that. I thought it was going to be a lot of that, just like, you know, oh, it's quirky,
existential conversation.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I like that.
But I was kind of waiting for it to kick off, and then so once it did, and then I thought brilliant. Like, I loved the, you know, I didn't take a huge amount of notes, I will say, because I'm trying to not, because I find I miss a lot of stuff when I do that. But like, I love, one of the things I love most about the movie was Ralph Fiennes, like the way he would like go from like being mad eloquent, and then the next line he'd be like, oh fuck it.
He is amazing. Like, there's so many things that, like, quirks that they give his character. The fact that it's like, you know, he sleeps with all the elderly women in the hotel, but there was an interview with him, and he kind of said he likes the idea of being the gigolo, but in the movie, and like, he, you know, and like, he's, Ralph Fiennes seemed to think that he straight up got paid for it. Mm. And in the movie, it kind of painted a little bit more as like, it's a service he provides. You know, they keep coming back to him every year because of the service he provides. And one of those is having sex with him. And also, like, he likes doing it. He's like, it's not all fillet steak anymore, you know. He's like, you have to go for the fattier, meatier bits, and he's like, and I like those.
I just loved everything they gave his character. I thought at the start that I think that was it, like when his character started sort of getting a bit like normal, or like, you know, breaking from that sort of facade of like being so eloquent and so, you know, all this sort of stuff. Then I was like, you know, then I got a few chuckles, and then I was kind of, okay, now I'm in, you know.
What did you think of Zero? As
I liked him, yeah. I thought he was good.
He's very winning, isn't he? Like,
yeah, like, you know, I liked looking at him. I liked, you know, he looked good on camera. I liked his sort of energy, I suppose, you know, that he gave off. It was very sort of...
You're rooting for him.
Yeah.
The whole time.
I was rooting for him from the first scene, you know what I mean? And like, and I have to say as well, like, it did look, I know we can kind of say as we expect it that it looked good, but it looked fantastic, you know what I mean? There wasn't a shot that didn't look like good.
At this point in his career, like, he's gone, I mean, this is the biggest spectacle movie, maybe you would say.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Life Aquatic, you know, before this, but like, he kind of went down smaller scale since Life Aquatic.
But it's like, after Life Aquatic, he kind of went back into his shell a little bit, and then it took him a few movies to be like, da da.
But I'm back. And you know, you can see at this point, like, this is his eighth film.
Yeah.
He literally can just, he has his Rolodex now of being like, hey, want to show up for a scene?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Jason Schwartzman is playing Monsieur Jacques, I think, is his character.
Yeah.
And Owen Wilson is Monsieur Chuck at the end. Like,
God, it was great seeing Owen Wilson at the end.
I forgot he was in it, and I was like, oh, there he is.
I had that same reaction. And it was only when he's on screen, I was like, God, I love Owen Wilson.
Yeah,
and if nothing else, this whole series has just given me, it's shown me what's so great about Owen Wilson.
Hey, all right.
So, if nothing else.
We don't need to do that for another couple of years then. Brilliant. I'll move him down the pecking order. The plot kicks off with the will of Tilda Swinton, this woman that...
Tilda Swinton?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know.
In the makeup.
Oh, like, yeah.
Hence the Oscar. I think he said as well, in this one, it was like, he doesn't really have like a Jerry Bruckheimer style budget with his movies. Yeah. And he was like, fuck it, I want to spend some money on putting a famous person under a load of prosthetics.
Yeah,
and she was game to do it. It was like 4 or 5 hours.
Wow, brilliant.
To get into it.
Didn't even cop it, like.
So she turns up. She turns up dead. I love the scene though when he was like, he's like, she's telling him she's scared or whatever, and they're having a back and forth. And he's like, oh no, you mustn't. Blah blah blah. You know, he's kind of talking real fast. He's like, what have you done to your nails? Oh, it's horrible. Like,
yeah.
You know, and like he is actually repulsed by her nail color. And then like when he arrives at her house for the funeral, he almost seems touched that she's like, she changed them. Like, you know, like.
You look better than you did, you know, whatever. You look alive.
She was dynamite in the sack. She's 84.
And like the whole stuff about like here's something I didn't understand. You might clarify for me. Why was Adrian Brody after Gustav, even because he didn't realize the painting. Yeah, because he didn't know the painting was missing until like an hour in or something. You know what I mean? So, like, why was he after him? Because he was going to get the painting?
Yes, exactly. Because he was named in the will. And even, I love this Adrian Brody performance.
I do too.
I think this might be my favorite Adrian Brody performance. And, like, we can't say it, but, like, when he shows up, he's like, that fucking F word. I was like,
It's another,
like, he did it in Life Aquatic as well. But like in this one, I'm like, it makes sense for the character.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense for the character of Adrian Brody, and it makes sense for the character of Gustav, because he's like,
yeah,
I don't know. Somebody says like, are you straight later on in the movie? He's like, well, that's one thing I've never been accused of being or whatever. Like,
should we have a little rundown of the cast? Because I was thinking of you every time Willem Dafoe was on screen.
Hey, what a performance. He's like a fucking James Bond villain.
Yeah, he is.
He's so good. Like,
it seemed like the sort of character that would have an eye patch.
You know what I
mean? Even though he didn't, it would have suited his character to have like an eye patch to go with it or something like that. I'm glad they didn't. But
he's so fucking good in this. Like, he's been in
this,
Life Aquatic, Fantastic Mr. Fox. I think that's just the three.
Yeah.
He's been great in all three.
And very different. Like,
yeah, they're all
him here versus Life Aquatic was like so different.
And then and then in Fantastic Mr. Fox, where he's like he's like the town tart.
Yeah.
He's like,
he was
it's my job.
The scene where he like, you know, where Jeff Goldblum is like, I don't agree.
He just
throws the cat out the window and walks off. It's like, did he just throw my cat out the window? And by the way, Jeff Goldblum as well, he's
really
not
good.
Being Jeff
he's,
Goldblum.
He's acting.
Someone.
He's acting, Andy.
Acting.
Yeah, like I love how the sisters are all like, no, I don't think so. No, that couldn't possibly be right. Like,
yeah, I liked his character.
You got Jeff
Goldblum.
Although
he didn't have a lot to do, but he was good for what he did.
You get Ed Norton.
He was good too.
And again, like he's bringing out that like goodness that, you know.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, you could imagine the character Moonrise Kingdom and this character being like distant relatives.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
you definitely could.
You know, and I
and it's that funny because like before I got into Moonrise Kingdom, when he first popped on the screen, I was like, oh, Ed Norton, I hear he's a complete bastard.
Yeah.
And then, but now because of Moonrise Kingdom, when I seen him in this, I'm like, hey, look at good old Ed Norton.
Eddie!
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. There's a scene in this, like that scene where they get like roughed up at the border. And like, it just goes to show you like how like good and decent a man Gustav was, even if he has all his faults. He's like, no, he hasn't done anything.
Yeah, he didn't want him.
You can't
touched.
Just, because he's an immigrant, he has his visa, whatever. And like, then Ed Norton comes in and breaks it up. And he was like, yes, I remember you. And he's like, you were very kind to me when I was a lonely little boy.
Yeah,
and like,
again,
the other loneliness theme that I was like, that kind of really like struck a chord at me, being like, oh, this guy that like, first of all, Gustav and Ed Norton, but it's like they have both, like, I don't know, his goodness has paid off, like,
yeah,
down the line. But also, like, Ed Norton remembering it, and, like, it's obviously meant a lot to him. Like, there's this whole, yeah, like, theme of, like, connection running through the film.
Yeah.
As well, like, if you think of, like, the connection that, like, Gustav seems to make with everybody in his hotel, like, yeah, ultimately it pays off huge dividends for him.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, like, the connection that Zero makes with Gustav, you know, pays off, yeah, for him. Like, it just...
I'm frozen again.
I'm not frozen. You're frozen.
I'm frozen.
Yeah, you're frozen.
Damn, this is my Wi-Fi. Okay.
I'm fine.
Click, so I'll know.
Sitting right here.
Damn it. God damn it. My Wi-Fi is terrible. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, but, like, if we want to go through some maybe other actors that are in it, like,
Saoirse Ronan was good.
She's, yeah, and she speaks with an Irish accent.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. I've heard her. I'm like, oh, there she is. Like, yeah,
the real her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought she was great. She didn't have, like, a huge amount to do, like, or, you know, in terms of acting. Well, that's not even fair, but she didn't have to, you know.
I love their relationship, and I love the, yeah, relationship that Gustav has with the two of them. And then, like, yeah, him be like, Tony or Zero being like, don't flirt with her, you know, it's, what, yeah, what do you get, like that Gustav brings her flowers, and, you know, while he's interviewing her, say,
yeah, that confused me though, because how come he was interviewing her when he was in prison? Like, he's in prison.
Wasn't he? No, it was before prison.
Oh, okay.
It was before, okay, he went to prison. Okay. And then, like, he's standing there, Zero is standing there being like, this isn't right, like, or whatever. You know, yeah, it's kind of a bit of jealousy there, but also, yeah, like, Gustav is not really a threat, yeah, at all. Yeah. Like, even when, like, he comes and visits him, he's like, how's our girl, like, she's a canting, Agatha. How's our girl, yeah, Agatha? You know, and I was like, oh, that's like, you're in prison. Like, that's one of the things you want to ask about, like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
At the start, I was thinking, oh, he's going to make a move and I'm going to not like him anymore or something like that. But
no, that would betray the character, I think.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I was like, please don't do that.
Yeah. You don't, again, because you're invested, you don't want it, yeah, to, you know.
By that stage, I was in love with him.
And I love how, like, the scene where, like, Adrian Brody punches Gustav in the face, and then Zero punches
Adrian Brody,
and then Defoe punches he's gonna shows up with his two hands, like, and, you know, yeah, they make a break for with Boy with Apple, which is the painting that he, you know, he has been bequeathed,
yeah,
and the picture they replace it with is, like,
yeah,
it's so vulgar, like, good. But what's so funny about it is, like, they don't care about it. They don't care about the painting, even though it's priceless or whatever like that, because, yeah, they haven't even noticed that it's gone until, yeah, like, you know, he's been in prison and broken out of prison. It's only then he's like, what the fuck?
That is so funny. Like, like, the whole movie was sort of carrying on with this, and they're just cracking on. You assume that they kind of know whatever. Like, what the fuck? Like, I thought you knew.
So funny. Adrian Brody swearing in this, like, yeah, is just so funny. Like,
and what else?
So, like, he gets arrested for stealing of the painting.
And I love that
No, it's for murder. He gets arrested for murder.
For murder, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I love when he gets the painting, he's like, I shall hang it above my bed till the day I die. It's like, next line, he's like, actually, we should sell it.
He's like, yeah, straight away. You should sell it. And then, like, the grand plan is to retire, you know, yeah, whatever. You can't do with justice how fucking, like, good every line delivery is
by Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah, like, it just... It's so perfect, like,
you know, even, like, the scene where they, like, you know, we'll talk about the prison stuff, but, like, when they finally get out or whatever, and Zero is there and all this, and Zero is telling him this nice romantic thing that he wrote or whatever, and he's like, that's wonderful. I'm going to stop you there now because the alarms are going off.
The
way he, the delivery of it, like.
But there's something, like, that, you know, you want to know the bit that got me in this movie.
I do. Yeah, yes,
is,
I do.
Is literally a minute before that where he, so, like, they break out of prison. First of all, he's in prison, getting serious Paddington 2 vibes from the prison stuff. Like, you know,
serious what vibes?
Paddington 2 vibes. I know, yeah, and Paddington 2 was a few years later, but it was like they're in their stripy uniforms. I love when he meets him the first time after prison. And he's like, oh my God, your face. And he's like, oh yeah, well, you have to like beat up the biggest person you see or whatever. It's like, oh, he understands the streets, like, you know, this kind of like metrosexual before there was metrosexuals, like.
And it was like, it looked like his, he had like mascara running or something, you know, from his head.
We're actually really quite good friends now.
Yeah.
And like, when
I think he'd always throw in a little line at the end that would just make you crack up.
Wes Anderson said, all the darlings are written. But like in the other movies, like any of the physical flourishes he left up to the actors. But like he said, all the darlings are in there, you know, oh yes, darling, or whatever. You know, they're in the script, but the little spins he's putting on them with, you know, his
like you can tell it's
cadence
like it's,
or whatever.
Yeah, like it's obviously a well written part in like to begin with. So like it's a good meshing of like a well written comedic role with someone who takes it even further.
Yeah. Knocks it out of the park. Like,
yeah, because whoever Wes Anderson would have picked, if he wasn't available or whatever, and he had got, you know, whoever, Bill Murray, or some, I mean, it wouldn't have worked with Bill Murray, but, you know, someone else who was in his movies a lot, that would have, or not, but like whoever it was, would
it's
have
a,
done.
It's a good role
it's
to
a,
be
it's
given.
It's a good role.
Yeah,
that's
it's a
it,
good role
yeah.
to be given. And,
he elevated it.
Yeah, 100%. So, like, you know, they have the whole breakout plan, and when they break out, when he, you know, the rest of the prisoners run off, and the escape is fucking class as well. Like all the little bits, like when he's offering them the mush, mush boys. Anyone like any mush? And then there's like one guy who takes it, and then there's somebody's like, hey, they're escaping. That big guy that takes it, like, you know, says like, oh bless saves you, bless like, the little something like that. Like, but when they get out and he's like, oh, where's the safe house? And he's like, I couldn't find one. Or, you know. Yeah, and then he's like,
where's the costumes?
We're in them. And he's like, where's the panache? You know, his spray.
Yeah.
And it's like, I forgot the panache. And he's like, well, that's just great, isn't it? He's like, he's like, oh, of course somebody like you wouldn't remember. Where do you come from anyway? He's like, Al-Bakazan or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, He's basically laying into him, and then Tony Revolori says, Zero says, he's like, why did you even come here? And he's like, the war. I came here from the war because my dad was killed and the rest of my family shot by a firing squad or whatever.
Was that the part that got you?
The next part is like, oh, so you're more of a refugee. And then like you just see like Ralph Fiennes' face just like kind of crumple. And then he's like, I'm a bloody idiot, you know, like it's something that like you see over the course of a movie that would happen for like a person starts here, and then they, you know, or they start at the bottom and they go to the bottom. This one, it's like he's an arsehole, and almost within 2 minutes, I was like, you can feel his remorse, and you can feel that like. This
see that's mad because like I like now when you say it got you, do you mean like it made you well up?
It made me well up, yeah. It made me well up, and I was like,
we are different creatures. Because I was thinking like, oh, that's funny. Like I was like, it's funny that. Because he's doing that again, where he's one way, and then the next line is like, I'm so sorry, I'm and I'm like, I was
but
laughing.
But this
at
was
that bit.
This way. Now this bit was more heartfelt because he's like, it's beneath the hotel. And I'm sorry. And like, you can tell that really means a lot to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This paragon of whatever they have, this thing they put on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, that, as opposed to that one, this one was way more like.
Yeah. It was more meaningful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the worst thing is, you know, he goes and makes the phone call then to the secret keys or whatever. Society of the Cross Keys, which is great.
I like that, yeah.
And you know, you get Bill Murray, you get Bob Balaban, you get
it's your man. I mean, I don't know.
Fisher Stevens.
Oh, who?
Fisher Stevens. Define me. Love me.
I was trying to rack my brain. I was like, where do I know him from? And I know it's loads of things. But early specifically, edition.
Short Circuit 2. He played an Indian guy in Short Circuit 2.
Phoebe's boyfriend in Friends Season 1. Thank you very much.
That's what you want him as.
Yeah. That's all I could remember from him. I haven't seen Short Circuit 2.
Maybe you haven't got to him yet. In Succession.
No.
He's in Succession, is he? He's in Succession. Ooh. I think he's in season 2 near the back half, and then season 3 he's pretty prominent.
Ah, brilliant. Good for him. I'm glad he's
great.
That's the end of my notes. I didn't take much.
The thing was when Bill Murray picks him up in the car.
Yeah.
And he gives him the panache. That's how he gets caught. They smell his perfume. Like,
they made a point at the start of saying his perfume let you know whatever, like, on his way.
There's a bit that I found so funny that was like, he's like, how many Clubecks do we have? And he's like, 47. He's like, give me 25. And he's like, he goes to give it to Bill Murray, and he's just like, please. The way he says please, and almost like, don't insult me.
Yeah.
You know, like, but
it was like he was insulted or something. Like, it was such a puny amount or something. Like,
please.
Yeah.
No, but it wasn't even like that. Like, it wasn't even like, please. It was like,
no need.
Yeah, no need. But also, like, I couldn't possibly. But also, a little bit of what you're there is
would you even think I would want anything in return?
Yeah, because it's the done thing because you're in the service industry, but I don't need it from you. You know what I mean?
I have to say, just a note on the whole diorama sort of shots and ski shots and stuff like that. Thought they were very well done.
I liked the whole thing.
There was one at the start where, like, they go into this thing that gets lowered down, and you can just see by the way it goes down, it's a bit like shaky or whatever. Like, it's clearly a small little figure, but they've computerized or put them in it, you know, and all that. It just looked like really good, and some of the stuff going uphill and downhill and all that. I thought it just looked excellent. The hotel looked excellent as well. I assume, like, is that a real hotel, or was that all one big prop or piece, or, you know?
I think it's a set. You know what I mean? Like the
exterior.
I don't know about the exterior. The interior is a set, and it's fucking deadly. Like, it looks,
it did look great on the inside.
So
but
good, like, you know.
I wonder, was it a thing? Was it an actual hotel on the outside or something?
What's it? Yeah, it probably was.
It's quite striking.
But, like, what's really interesting, actually, about, if you look at it, I don't know if you picked this up. So in the 30s, the hotel is full of people, full of customers, full of staff, you know, all this thing. And then by the time we're in, whatever, 60s, 70s, was it? You know, it's drab. It's, you know, it's under communist regime. There's no people. There's no other staff working there. All the food is like vending machines. I was like, that's a really interesting, like, piece to put in there.
I noticed because it's
like almost like, oh, it was bad times. There's a war going on, but it also seemed like it was contributing to society. You know what I mean? Like, the whole surrounding area, people had jobs working for this place, this giant hotel.
As bad as the times where the hotel was thriving, the people in it were thriving, and all this
and
sort
now,
of stuff. And now,
post war, it's just you know, drab. And
one thing that I kind of thought, like, I get that, but by the end it was. And I know we'll get back to it, but the way they kind of had everyone kind of just died or didn't, you know, it didn't seem like a happy ending for anyone.
But
you
that's
know what I mean?
The thing, I guess.
And, like, I don't know if it was just the little part of the optimist in me that was just like, I want someone to get out here and be like.
Well, they did for a time, I think, and they say it explicitly. It's like the reason why he keeps the hotel. He's like, he doesn't keep it, like, while Zero keeps the hotel. He doesn't keep it for Mr. Gustav.
Yeah.
To honor his memory. He keeps it for Agatha because he was happy here with Agatha for a while.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I know the ending of the things, like, she dies in childbirth. Well, not childbirth, she died, her...
and her and their
infant son,
kid,
die of like a disease that was treatable. Like, that was like, oh, I was like, wow, fucking COVID. Like, big, yeah. big, like, oh.
Premonitions there. Yeah,
way of the world. That's the way, but like, that's history repeating itself almost, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
then Gustav ends up
shot.
Dying. Shot.
And that was like, that was a hard. I've seen it twice before, but every, you know, when he's in the train and it's black and white,
yeah,
and he gives your man, he's like, no, and he gives him this thing, and like at this point he's a man of status now, like, you know, he's a rich guy, he gives it to him, and it's just, he rips it up,
yeah,
and you're like, oh shit, like, you know. And then I love how they don't show it, and the F. Murray Abraham being like, in the end they shot him. And I'm like,
God. It was a bit too abrupt, or it was too blunt or something for me. I was like, come on.
But that's what I love about this movie, is that, like, you know, there is this melancholy hanging around it. Like, the highs are very high, and like if you look at it, a lot of this film is shot in pink. Like, there's pink and reds and vibrant colours. But there's also underneath that, you know, there's a sadness. Yeah. And like,
Well, I was going to say, one thing I did notice that was different about this to the rest was that there was a real lack of, and not necessarily lack of, but they just chose not to have, you know, those big numbers, those big needle drops, as we would say. You know, like, no big Rolling Stones numbers, or different.
He kind of has moved away from that since, I think, the last one.
Yeah, Moonrise. Yeah.
Mr. Fox, Fantastic Mr. Fox is the last kind of needle drops in them, really. I don't remember Isle of Dogs. I'll be interested to fire that one up again.
Which one is next?
Isle of Dogs is next, then French Dispatch.
And I'm guessing that you, well, I don't want to blow our stack, but you've hinted that there's one or two in the later ones that you're not as big a fan of.
Well, Isle of Dogs, I've only seen the one time when I met Tony in the cinema.
Oh, yeah.
Funny enough. I was like, yeah, it's good, Wes Anderson. It wouldn't be top tier, was my initial thing. So I'll be interested to see what that's like. French Dispatch, at the time, I was like, not confused, but I was almost like critical of it, because I was like, oh, I don't think this is what I wanted. Yeah. But as I've sat with it, I've been like, I can't wait to watch it again. Okay. That's the thing for me. So like, I wouldn't say, like, if I was to give you a prediction for me, I would say maybe of the last two, in my memory, Isle of Dogs is going to be worse than French Dispatch.
Right.
But I don't know. Like, a lot of people didn't like French Dispatch. I still think it's a really, really well-made, good movie. And there are definitely parts in that like, I didn't think were going to get to me, that struck me. And there's nudity in it.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Now I'm...
I tell you who gets naked in it. The Lea Seydoux, who... She is the French maid. She's the maid in this. I say French maid, that sounds like some sort of Pornhub search. Maybe that's just me.
Lea Seydoux. Oh, she's...
Bond.
Oh. No, I thought... For a second I thought that was... For a second I thought that was your one from Succession.
Sarah Snook?
Shiv, is that her name?
Yeah, Siobhan Roy.
But it is not. Okay, interesting.
I
look forward to that.
Just to touch back on the snow stuff before we finish. Like, I loved, like, Willem Dafoe's... There's a couple of, like, set pieces that Willem Dafoe has in this. The killing of Jeff Goldblum. His whole little side quest that he's going on. Like, the killing of Jeff Goldblum. That scene is so fucking good. Where, like, that whole sequence, he's, like, chasing them on the motorbike while, you know, Jeff Goldblum is on the bus, and then they go to the museum and he's stalking them. And, like, when you just see him, like, take off his shoes.
Yeah.
And then, like, Jeff Goldblum thinks he's in the clear.
Yeah.
Gets killed, and like the door shut on his fingers. Like, oh, so good. And then when you think he's going to like knock Mr. Gustav off the edge, and he's like, well, I'm going out, like, he's like doing this big noble like poem or whatever, and he's just like standing on the ice, and then Zero just like out of nowhere just like boom, he's like, bloody hell, like,
you killed the fucker. Yeah, brilliant. So I did laugh at that. It's just like it's the classic, and he does it every time, and I laugh every time where he's waxing lyrical or mad poetic about something, and then he completely like cuts it and like just fuck.
It's, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of like The Simpsons in their prime, where they'd be like, "We're building something up here," and then just like smash, like you're building a tower, and then like somebody just like smashes it out from underneath it, like, and the whole thing. I just found myself chuckling because I knew it was coming. I was like, "Are you Mr. Gustav?" He's like, "Yes." He's like, "Follow me." And like going like, "Are you Mr. Gustav of the Grand Budapest?" "Yes." And then at the last, I was like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, just tell me."
Yeah, that was great. In the confession box.
Yeah. No, they send them down. I think they send them down to the confession. That's been the fourth one.
Right,
They send them down to the confession box then. Like.
Oh, yeah. It was just, he was like, it's just.
Sounds like you really enjoyed
shame.
This movie, Andy.
What?
Sounds like you really enjoyed this movie.
You know what? Like, I really enjoyed Ralph Fiennes. It was the best performance in any of the movies that we've watched so far, by far.
Wow, really?
And
by
there's
far.
Been some, and there's been some good performances. Yeah, 100%. This is like one of my favorite, I think, movie
ever.
Performances ever. Mm. I would say. However, I don't want to end on a not positive note, or a negative note, if you will. This one, if I was ranking them, right, if I may.
Well, let's do your rating before we rank.
Okay.
Yeah, because we can work out the ranking.
The wanking from the waiting.
I mean, that's after we finish up.
Hello.
Here. It gets a little blue.
It gets a little blue after midnight. I would give this an 8 out of 10. You can't scoff at an 8 out of 10. What would you give it?
You ready?
Go on. Here we go. Here's the show. Here we go. 7, 8, 9. Come on.
I'll give it a 10.
Oh boy.
I think this is a perfect film. I think there is there's no fault in it for me. Every performance is pitch perfect. The script flies along. It's an hour 40 and so much happens.
I did appreciate that. No.
So much happens in an hour 40. Are you kidding me? Wow. Yeah. Like it's miraculous the amount of plot that they fit in, and it doesn't feel rushed.
Yeah.
You know what? You're just like, yeah, keep going, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, they kind of undercooked that. There was none of that.
There was none of that.
I will say.
You know, it has what I love these days is it has a lot of feels, has a lot of heart, like, you know.
I would say, like, I can't even put my, like, the whole idea of this series is because I traditionally wouldn't like these sort of movies, you know what I mean? And you're trying to show me what's, for want of a better expression, what's so great about it.
There we go.
What's so great about it. And so, like, I'm not as, like, you're walking in with big open arms and we're like, give me what you got. Yes, love it. Pile it on. Yeah, I'll have another. Yes, I'll have seconds and thirds. And whereas I'd be eating it and I'm like, no, this is okay. Like, this is fine, thanks. You know what I mean? I don't like the same kind of movies in general that you would like. Or that, you know, the rest of the world apparently like. But having said that, like, I feel like I'm giving it a negative review when I'm not. I'm just not gushing. It's not one of the best movies I've ever seen.
I'd feel happier if he gave it an extra 0.5, but that's just me.
Not happening. I can't, because then it would ruin my ranking.
Why would it ruin your ranking?
I don't know. I can't remember any of
them. Well, the other ones are like sevens. You get no one like sevens.
I would put Moonrise Kingdom first. I would put Life Aquatic second, and I would put this third in their list. So it's in the top three of the eight so far.
Okay.
This would be your top
number one.
Then?
Number one, yeah.
This is your top. Moonrise.
I thought it was
going to
be. It did not disappoint me. Love it. Yeah. Fucking so much. It's a film. Like, I was like, because we were supposed to record last week for this, and I was like, I'd watched it, and I was like, I want to watch it again.
Did you?
I didn't have time. But I was like, I want to watch it again.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. Because
I enjoyed
it. What a movie. Like.
I enjoyed it because, like, for the earlier ones, there was ones where I was kind of like, you know, where I was saying before, like, I feel like an outsider looking in. But I would recognize the parts that were good. But then when the good parts were done, I was kind of like sitting, just watching it. And there was just a little bit of that where I didn't get that at all with Life Aquatic, really. Or I didn't get that with Moonrise Kingdom.
Hmm.
Where I was thinking, you know, but like that only for small portions of this one. So that's why it definitely gets the nod over the rest of them. But the other is just, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't need all the Wes Anderson stuff. And I feel like this was slightly oversaturated. You know what I mean? Him tinkering with his little fucking whatever, you know. It's too crafty. Too crafted. I want a bit of... it felt like there was a bit less riffing in this one. You know what I mean? Maybe it's because there was less Bill Murray in it. I don't know. But like, I don't need that much Wes Anderson. You know what I mean? Moonrise was perfect. Was a perfect
That
amount.
Was your sweet spot.
Yeah. You know, because it still looked great, but it was really good. You know, like, not to say this wasn't a good movie, but just I thought it was top anyway. But still, don't. It feels like I'm ending on a negative, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. It
right.
was, you know, top three.
Okay.
So well, that's where I'll leave it.
Okay, leave it there. So, do you want to get some plugs in?
Please. You can find us on Instagram at What's So Great About Pod. You can find us on Twitter at WSGA Pod. You will find on our social media links to everything we do. If you want to know more, you can tip us on Ko-fi. If you want to buy us a coffee, you can do that on the link in our Instagram bio. You can see some Patreon freebies, some videos, and the Patreon itself.
Oh, the Patreon. Well, thank you for mentioning that, Andy. Over behind the paywall, we got two tiers. We got our Hungry Hearts tier, where it's literally you pay what you want. I think a euro is the minimum. So if you want to pay a euro, you can pay a euro. And that gets you access to 4 bonus episodes per month. I mean, you're doing pretty well off us there, guys. Just saying, you know. So you get your whole back catalogue of the What's So Great About Marvel, What's So Great About 90s action movies, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, What's So Great About Big Willy's Flops. And then you get a bunch of other bonus episodes, a bunch of top 5, a bunch of curated playlists that me and Andy made for each other. A whole rake of stuff. Now, the second tier we have is our $5 tier, which is our Big Shots tier. You get all the stuff I mentioned earlier. Plus, we've added some extra stuff here. So you get a bit of merch that'll be coming out to you.
Pending.
Excuse me?
Pending.
I thought you had this handled, Andy.
I mean, it's the merch is coming.
Yeah,
but it's,
yeah,
just, it's coming.
Yeah.
Merch is pending.
I want my merch too. Don't forget me.
Don't you worry about that. I got you sorted.
You also get, we're going to be adding a bonus Q&A pod for just you guys. You got Qs, we got As. One of them a month extra.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're getting a lot. Your money is
plus,
stretching.
Plus, you now get the videos
of
the pods too on that tier as well. So you don't miss out. If you're on the lower tier, you get access to all the audio stuff. If you're on the other tier, you get a little extra.
Yeah. Now, if you can't afford that, well, I understand, but not really.
Do you?
You know, I understand, but not really. Really, if you can't do that, fine. Okay. But do me something else. You can give me a rating or review. Now, Andy.
Yeah? Where is he going to go with this one?
In this movie. There were one, Bill Murray. Two, Bob Balaban. Three, Fisher Stevens. Four, that Indian guy. Five, another guy. Members of the Society of Cross Keys. There are five members, Andy.
Okay, okay.
And you know what? You know what? I want five-star review from the Lotties. Each and every one is out there listening. Give me a five-star review on Apple, on Spotify, on your podcatcher of choice. I need it.
You need it, folks. And thanks very much for everyone who did already.
Need it.
You need it, all right? Just take it easy, okay?
Fuck it. So that would be a big help. You know, that really helps get the ears on the pod. And really, you know, it's the least you could do. It's a free podcast here that we put out, rain or shine, you know, once a week, 52 weeks a year.
Incredibly consistent, I think you'll agree.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here. So yeah, do that for us, would you? Or you could tag us on social media. You know, tell a friend about the podcast. Tag a friend. All that good stuff. Do our marketing for us, please. Mm-hmm. We need it. We're the little guys here.
Support independent podcasts. Blind Boy says it himself. The podcast world is riddled with big studio productions and the fucking, you know,
all
big
these fucking
budget
celebrities have their own podcast.
Big
now.
Budget podcast. What about the little guy? I care.
Clicky
Terry
cares. And of course, if you've made it this far, you're doing the Lord's work. Thank you very much.
Very, very much. And hey, I love you for it.
He does. And you get the big L from me. Behind the paywall. You get a big throbbing L from me.
Next week, what have we got, Terry?
We're taking a little trip to a little isle. An isle inhabited by canines.
Well, find out what that means next week, guys.
I can't be any more cryptic. I'll never tell.